Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Dukmasova, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home Puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It is Friday, August 27th, 2021. The headline on the front page of my beloved Bright One, home delivered as always. Police union prez slammed for comparing vax mandate to Holocaust. John Catanzara has lost his freaking mind. He's the head of the Fraternal Order of Police. MAGA has lost its freaking mind. We'll get into that and other issues, particularly a TV show named The White Lotus, which my distinguished guest and I have been just chomping at the bit to discuss for the last 2 weeks. So without further ado, I'll ask my distinguished guest to introduce herself, and then we'll get down to business. Take it away, distinguished guest.
I'm Ramana Hussein. I'm an assistant metro editor at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes, and she's also a columnist, and she's got a lot of opinions, and she's not afraid to share them. And God bless Ramana Hussein. Comes on this show every other Friday, and our listeners love her. All right, Ramana. Wow. I mean, you and I have been dying to talk about The White Lotus, which should be called White People Behaving Badly, as I quipped to you before we came on the air today. I haven't seen white people behave so badly in a TV show since, like, I saw a documentary about the KKK and they were wearing white sheets. This is a little more nuanced and subtle, but it's very profound in its own way. And so we will take the deep dive on that when we get to Ramana's recommendations. We'll probably be expanded bit on that. But before we do, I need to get your thoughts on this. And I talked about it briefly yesterday on the show. Your colleague, Fran Spielman, seems to bring out the best in John Catanzara, best in quotes I have. He, of course, is the head of the Fraternal Order of Police. And Lori Lightfoot proposed that, or ordered, I should say, that city workers, including police officers, take the vaccine, to which John Catanzara got in the horn with Fran Spielman and said, and I'm quoting here, what did he say? "We're in America, goddammit. We don't want to be forced to do anything, period. This ain't Nazi fucking Germany where they say, step into the fucking showers. The pills won't hurt you." What the fuck? Ramana, what's going on?
I think the reason we do probably need mask mandates as the numbers are going up with the Delta variant. And we need to wear the masks because people are refusing to get vaccinated, as well as not wearing masks when they were supposed to or are supposed to. So that's why it's needed. So I understand why we need the mask mandate. I don't think anybody enjoys wearing a mask, especially when you're in a tight room and it's hot. But we have to do it if we want to keep the numbers down. And if people keep insisting on not getting vaccinated, this is going to be something that we're going to be doing on and off for a while.
Well, we get into this issue where it becomes a collective bargaining issue. So, for instance, does Mayor Lori Lightfoot have the right to unilaterally command all workers in the city, even those who are in a union, to take a shot? And I do not know the specifics of the collective bargaining agreements that govern the relationship between Lori Lightfoot and the city workers. I do know, like, for instance, in the NBA and the NFL, the basketball and the football associations, the league has to negotiate to some degree with the players, setting up protocols or punishments, or requirements. If they get COVID, how long they have to sit out. If you don't have the shot, you have a certain number of days that you're allowed, you're forced to be in quarantine, more days than if you have the shot, if you get COVID. So, and then test, okay, if you're not going to get the shot, then you have to be testing. So I presume it has to be collective bargained. But the opposition, help me out here, Ramona. We talked about this briefly the last show you're on. Just the anger that's in Kent Zare's voice and the violence, really, that's in the metaphor he drew up. What's going on here? What do you see? How do you see this?
Well, I don't even know why it's a political issue. I mean, a lot of people, I don't know, Ben, if you went to school, you have to prove that you're got vaccinations for certain illnesses, correct? When you were younger. I mean, I had to. So, and nobody raised any sort of objections then. It's become a political issue, you know, for reasons we know, but it's just ridiculous that people are fighting against something that is going to help, you know, reduce the numbers and help those individuals as well. We've heard so many stories where people aren't vaccinated and then they end up in the hospital and they're like sitting there while they're fighting for their life and saying things like, oh, I wish I had gotten the vaccine. And I understand. You know what? I completely understand the concerns about the vaccine coming out really quick and, you know, people saying that we don't know what the vaccine's going to do. But there's so many other people are saying we take medicine all the time. Do we sit there and look at the labels when we take like a cough syrup or anything that we put in our body? People put people are taking drugs like left and right. You know what I mean? It's like they're doing hard drugs. They don't know where it came from and they're still putting it in their body. So for people to sit there and bring, you know, when we have scientists mostly vouching for this vaccine, questioning it, it's really mind boggling. And I just, you know, my niece brought up a good point. You know, I know Americans love their pets. Do these people get their pets vaccinated? Do they sit there and hold their pets and say, I'm not going to get my pet vaccinated? All these people probably get their pets vaccinated, but they don't want to get themselves vaccinated. And it's one thing if it was an issue where if it only affected that individual who didn't want to take the vaccine, that's one thing. But you not taking the vaccine is going to affect others and basically cause this to spread. You know, we get the numbers down. We had the numbers down for a while. And then there's going to be so many different variants. This COVID, COVID-19 is mutating in different ways. But people are still reluctant. They're like looking at the numbers. And I think people just want, when people want to be in denial, they want to be in denial. And so we're hearing this rhetoric, you know, from the head of the police union, comparing it to Nazi Germany. And you know, obviously it's very, very offensive that he's comparing this to, you know, Nazi Germany and, you know, the Jewish people led to their deaths, you know, during this time in the concentration camps. So it's crazy. You know, a lot of companies, a lot of private companies, I don't know if you heard, but Delta Airlines is basically penalizing their employees. And so private companies are definitely starting to penalize individuals for not getting the vaccine, or at least telling them that if you come to work, you're going to have to at least wear a mask and, you know, quarantine when something happens. So yeah, there's going to be rules. And City of Chicago, I guess it's a public, you know, where it would be called, like, if you're working for the City of Chicago, it's a public entity, right? But I think the mayor has a right to enact things. You know, police officers work with the public. So you're not going to get vaccinated when you go up to someone or you're working in the police department or you're driving around, you're going to not be vaccinated. But we knew that was going to come. We knew people were going to fight against this. There's so many people who work for the City of Chicago, and there's not, you know, people fighting against not getting the vaccine is like everywhere. I don't think it, you can just walk outside, you know, your house and do a survey and you'll find someone who's an anti-vaxxer within minutes.
Well, I've, to the point of the police department, it is a little upsetting to think that
the
police department is so alienated from the rest of the city. It's a point I keep making and I will continue to make. They're so alienated from the rest of the city that the head of their union is babbling on like this. Like, this is the greatest injustice. If this is the greatest injustice you've ever faced, John Cannizzaro, you've had a blessed life. If the greatest injustice you've ever faced as a human being in your existence is that someone has mandated you to take a vaccine that'll prevent you from getting a horrific disease and possibly spreading it to other people, you've had a good life. You should be thanking God every day. What a good life I have. This is the only thing I have to complain about. And help me out here. So I find it really just, I'm just, my advice to all police officers who are free never to listen to me, because nobody else does, I can tell you that right now. Why would you go down this path? You realize you're in a city where roughly 80% over voted against Donnie Trump, and people want to get the vaccine to a large degree and view rhetoric like this is really ugly. Why would you link yourself to this? I just from a practical standpoint, I do not understand why, how you think this is going to help you win over support from the public on a lot of different issues.
It won't win over support from the public, but it will win support from the people who are already anti-vax. That's what I think, because they look at rhetoric like this and they're like, yeah, it's like Nazi Germany. That's what they're forcing us to do this. They're forcing us to, you know, get the shot. Like, they're forcing the Jewish people to go into these showers. So I don't think it, you know, helps people like you and I. We're not going to sit there and be like, oh yeah, but trust me, all the people who are anti-vaxxers, this just enables them more and it kind of helps them double down. That's what I think.
Well, I mean, I wrestle with whether I should address this in a column or write it, because it seems so obvious, but having just a minimal study of Nazism, the rise of Nazism in Germany in the 30s will show you that it did not begin with the state ordering people to take a vaccine. It's just so freaking absurd. It just is a historical analogy. It didn't start with Hitler and Goebbels saying, you must take this medicine. It's going to be good for you.
They make this stuff up.
Go ahead.
Let's be honest. If the vaccine was out during that time, the Jewish people would not be getting it in Nazi Germany.
That's true. So I don't know. And really, I don't know, MAGA, just refrain from Nazi metaphors. I'm just a little piece of advice. Not that MAGA's going to take any advice from me, but
you know, and the funny thing is MAGA and Trump, a lot of their policies were the policies that were similar before the in Germany that ended up becoming, you know, Nazi Germany. You know what I mean? So all these policies against certain individuals, that's more like Nazi Germany than anything. So I think it's just the rhetoric that they're using, trying to enable or just embolden everybody else that's anti-vaxxer.
You make a very good point. Targeting whole groups of people and reducing entire groups of people to single stereotypes so that it's easier, what? To keep them out of the country, to malign them, to lock them in cages, what have you. That's at the heart of what Trumpism was about from the moment.
Exactly.
That has more in line, metaphorically speaking, with fascism in Germany than a liberal government saying, please, people, please, please take this vaccine. By the way, in the midst of all this madness, I got a press release. I don't know if you got the same one from the Governor Pritzker's office saying, hey, good news. The last... this is you'll love this. Scholarships have been awarded to the following people who won the lottery to take the vaccine. Remember the lottery to get people to take the vaccine back in the day?
Yeah,
they were trying to sugar instead of a vinegar, and so they just announced the win. I'm just shaking my head, going, this world is utterly insane. You got to beg people to take. a vaccine. Justice Smollett, we've talked so much about this. This, of course, is nobody needs a recitation of what the Justice Smollett case is about. Even David Chappelle has made comedy bits about it, which I just, by the way, Ramona happened to watch again the other day. It was hilarious. David Chappelle's bit on Jussie Smollett, the great French actor. But Smollett. Yeah. Interesting story in today's Bright One. Sometimes, although I guess it was an AP story, that the case is still, you know, Jussie Smollett is still, his case is still very much alive in the Cook County court system. Very bizarre, in my humble opinion, a ruling by the judge in that matter. And you covered the county, the courthouse, criminal courthouse. Please explain to folks what the ruling was. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not peculiar. Take it away, Ramona.
The judge basically yesterday, so this case is before Judge James Lynn. Jussie Smollett, he's still awaiting trial for people who forgot about this case, but he basically was charged with disorderly conduct, as we know, in 2019 for allegedly making up this hate crime. And then the charges were dropped. He was charged again by a special prosecutor. So the case is still pending, and the judge is still going over what, you know, lawyers are going to be talking about when the trial comes up. And the judge did say he wants this case, this trial, to come before 2021 is over. So maybe we'll see a trial before this year's over. So the judge basically yesterday had a ruling that, you know, raised everybody's eyebrows. He said that Jussie Smollett's attorneys cannot call on Kim Fox as a witness or as someone to question. So, you know, obviously Kim Fox's office, as we know, is the one that dropped the charges in 2019 before the actor was charged again. So a lot of people are probably thinking, wouldn't she be a key part of the testimony and, you know, talk about the case? So, yeah, I think a lot of people are just kind of scratching their heads on that one. I wasn't in court. Our court reporter was out for the day, and I admit I did not know this was up. So that's why we had the AP story. So I don't know what exactly happened in court or if the judge, like, gave a reasoning for it. He didn't put out an official order, so there's nothing that we had to read. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting development in the case. I think we're all going to be watching this one. So I don't know what this means in terms of Jussie's defense. So it'll be interesting.
I have to say this. There's a part of me, I've been in this news business for 40 odd years, and I always want to know. And like you, Ramona, and I've always been on the outside looking in, trying to figure out what the people who have power are up to. And I welcome any little sliver of evidence that gives me some sense of what they're up to. And so in this particular case, the great unanswered question is who called Kim Fox? You know what I mean? And what was exchanged? And so, in other words, we know that Tina Chen, the political consultant, the powerhouse Democratic operative who used to work for Michelle Obama, made a call connecting Kim Fox to some unknown member of Jussie Smollett's family. Kim Fox talked to her. That was her big mistake, in my humble opinion. We've had this conversation many times. I think that was a huge mistake on her part. But what was said, who that person was, what promises were made, that kind of thing, we don't know. And even after all the investigation by Dan Webb and money that's spent on it, Ramona, we still don't know. And so it's like the one thing worth knowing, we don't know. And now this judge, it's so typical Chicago. Well, I'm sorry, she can't testify. So now we won't know. And that, you know, and I mean, I know the Jussie Smollett case is small potatoes compared to everything else going on in the world. I know that. We make fun of ourselves for talking so much about it. But at the same time, I don't know. Don't you want to know?
I do. And I know a lot of people think, like, oh, who cares? But it does. I don't know. I think it's something that we need to look into, what exactly happened at the state's attorney's office and whether there's any favors pulled. Because Jussie Smollett's an actor, and his, you know, as we know, T. Tina Chen was involved, and I think she was a family friend. Tina Chen, by the way, she resigned from her position at Time's Up because I think Time's Up coached or like gave Andrew Cuomo some, you know, advice on how to handle the allegations against him. And so, there's just a lot of players involved. And, you know, the fact that there's big names involved and this is an actor, he's not the run of the mill person who gets charged at, you know, in the criminal court system. So it's like, and he's not even like a top actor, but this like just kind of like raises questions as to like, how come charges were dropped? How come this case, it wasn't a big deal with what happened at the end of the day, but why didn't the charges get dropped against him? And these are questions I think that, you know, that should be asked, especially when, you know, whether the system was fair for him as a fair in compared to other people who get charged for other things and get locked up. So
just sweep it under the carpet and move on. Classic Chicago. All right. And now it's time to get to the White Lotus. The appetizer has been consumed. Now we're getting to the main course of sorts. Usually it's the Romano's recommendation is like the last 5 minutes or so. But this show has had a real profound impact on me. I'm almost embarrassed to say because it's basically a soap opera. It lingered with me far longer than I ever would have thought it would. And I think it had a similar impact with you. So why don't you just start from the top, Romana? Give folks just like a backdrop, and we're talking here without script, so there may be some spoilers. As spoilers, we'll try not to, but I'm not going to kill myself bending over backwards. And it's not like when we did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when that came out, we would just warn people up front. We're taking a deep dive. There's going to be spoilers. But we'll try not to do too many spoilers. All right, get this set up, Romana.
Okay, first of all, before I start, I have to say that Ben really recommended this show to me. And he told me I would like it because it's about white people being annoying. And
and looking bad.
I laughed when he said that. And I remember my younger sister and a family friend of mine started watching it. And we were on a text group and they were talking about it and they were like complaining about one of the characters. And then I was like, oh, and so then when you told me, I was like, oh, okay, I think I'll take a look at it. And then I saw a lot of chatter about it. I actually started watching it like right when the last show dropped. And so I saw Twitter was going crazy. And so I was like, oh, I better watch this show. So the show, basically, the backdrop is a bunch of individuals, mostly white people, going to this resort in Hawaii. It's a hotel resort, and it's like different scenarios. And the show, basically, the backdrop is about, like, you know, there's this one family, there's this one woman who's there, there's this one couple who's there for their honeymoon. So, you know, they all have different stories. But the theme of the story is definitely white privilege and white entitlement and how, kind of people keep this system in place where white people always get away with things and, you know, say things that they say. And they also kind of, you know, have commentary on how like white people say the right things. But I thought it was a good example of how white people still love their privilege and try to exert their power on others and use them. So I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty clever, you know, because a lot of people who would watch this, like, I don't think my husband McDumpy would ever want to watch this show. He would look at it. It's like, I don't want to watch these people on a resort, but you know, he probably wouldn't want to watch that. And then, but I was like, well, let me take a look. I was curious because everybody was chatting about it. And then, you know, obviously the last episode has this crazy scene that I saw everybody on Twitter was talking about. So I had to like avert my eyes for a while, not like watch that. And then once you watch the last episode, you know what people are talking about. But the show actually starts off with a dead body. And, you know, it's kind of like an Agatha Christie way, like you're trying to figure out who's the dead body. And, you know, I won't give anything away, but in between that mystery and what's happening, I think there was a lot of good commentary. And there's this one family who's there, they're a white family, and the daughter is a college age daughter, there, and then she has a friend who is a person of color. And those two women are very obnoxious in a way, but during, as the show unfolds, you kind of see the relationship, and the woman of color all of a sudden has this epiphany. And then, you know, she's kind of like, you know, kind of feeling guilty for kind of hanging out with white people. But then it, the show, I think the way she behaves shows how people of color sometimes fall into this trap too, where white, you know, white supremacy still is in play, and how we're at fault too in supporting the system. So it kind of, I think it had some clever commentary on people of color as well, and how we have to kind of play the game. And, you know, we live in a white world, but we do things to protect ourselves while trying to elevate others that are like us.
Yeah. Well, that was good. So let me just say this. The thing that really stings about the show, or one of the things that really stings, that, like, if you're watching it and reflecting on how you live your life, et cetera, and so forth, is that none of the white people in the show, and as Ramona said, it's like a demented Love Boat. Are you old enough to have seen the Love Boat?
I should tell you, I think I've told you before that we never had babysitters when we were little. Like, all our Indian families, like, our parents would get together on Friday, Saturdays. They didn't monitor us at all. So we turn on the TV, and then, you know, I think it was Love Boat and Fantasy Island. And we're all like seven or eight years old. And we'd be watching. So I definitely know what Love Boat is. I know what Fantasy Island is. And if we stayed up late enough, Benny Hill would turn up. And that totally... We were like, what's that?
Love Benny that Hill. Too.
Oh, God.
What a weirdo, Benny
anyway,
Hill.
Anyway.
Yeah, but anyway, so it's a demented Love Boat. And so the characters who are at this resort, none of them are overtly racist. Like, none of them are wearing MAGA hats. None of them are, wearing white hoods. In fact, my guess is if they voted at all, they probably all voted for Obama and are very proud of the fact that they voted
totally.
For Obama.
Well, yeah. I don't know if you saw that one character, the family. Well, my friend really loved the fact that she was a big Hillary Clinton supporter.
Yes, Hillary
Clinton. She mentioned Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So my friend's like, I'm so glad they showed her, like, what some of these white women Hillary Clinton supporters are like. But we were kind of laughing about that. So no, none of them are Trump supporters at all. They would not vote for Trump.
And they probably all would be vaccinated. By the way, the show was made. I'm a little embarrassed to admit I'd done a lot of reading about the show, a mini obsession of mine. The show was filmed during the pandemic. It's from the end of 2020. And the restrictions on the set were, my God, the Chicago Police Department would go nuts over this. I mean, they... Don't tell Canizera. They're outrageous. Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, they made people wear masks. Canizera, man, you would not want to be on the White Lotus. They made the people wear masks all day. If you were in makeup, you had to wear a shield. This is before the vaccine. But anyway, the point is probably all of them would be rushing to the head of the line, elbowing people out of the way to get that vaccine, for cheating, anything they can to get that vaccine. So this is a satire about liberals, by the way, Ramona, as opposed to lefties. I'm just going to say that. These are liberals. And as such, they don't see, and this is where it really stings, Ramona, they don't see the inconsistency of their ways. They don't hear themselves. They don't hear the privilege that drips from the stuff that they say. It's not like they ever have a step back and watch how they interact with the staff at the hotel, how condescending they are, how patronizing they are, or their attitude toward the whole people, Hawaiians, whose land they took to build this beautiful luxury hotel. They never take a step back and just examine it and think about it at all. They just, like you said, they just assume the privilege that has been given to them, and they do it feeling self-righteous, because at the very least, they're better than MAGA. So it really is a satire about white liberals.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's what I liked. That's what I liked about it, because the one young woman who was a college student, she's always sitting there reading like these random books that I would never take on a holiday, by the way. Yeah, it's really pretentious. She's reading these books and they're like sitting there. They have a different book every day. It's like there's no way you finish that book. And they're all like these woke books. And it's like she's always talking about like the white men. That's like the typical thing that a lot of people of color get annoyed with white women, where they act like they're the victims. And she's sitting there talking about white men and like, but she loves the white privilege. At the end of the day, she's entitled. Like if you watch the dynamic between her and her friend, who's a person of color, she always has the upper hand. And, you know, there's some sort of like hinting of a romantic relationship between the two. But the white woman definitely has an upper hand. And she always sits there and, you know, goes, I'm not like my family. And that's a lot of what we hear from other white people. A lot of times just people of color, like we're all not that bad. And, you know, I'm aware of this. But I mean, Ben, even you, at the end of the day, just admit it. You like your white privilege. I mean, I feel like so many people pretend that, you know, they don't have white privilege, and they definitely do. And it's like you don't notice it because you live in that world and you have. And, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that the show is about class. And I have to tell you, I do think that there's a little about class, but I think it's mostly about entitlement. Because, okay, I've been to hotels around the world, and not when I'm paying, but when my dad was or someone else. There's hotels that are a lot nicer than that. Like, I think that was like, I don't know, to me, and I did see some younger women talk about that, that one family, if they were so privileged, why didn't they get another room for their son? It's like he was sleeping in the kitchen. So like, if they were so moneyed, I think it was just one of the things. I think it was one of those things where it's like they want to feel like, you know, it's like this entitlement because they're white. They're definitely entitled. That one guy is like always worried about getting the room that he actually booked. So I think it's this entitlement that white people don't realize that they are always kind of, they live in this world where they're so used to getting everything they want. So when something, they don't get something they want, they become so fixated with it. I don't know. As a person of color, that's something I notice. And it's something that you become used to. And that's the whole thing. It's like we live in a mostly white majority world, right? A lot of us as people of color live in these white worlds, and we learn how to live, like survive. And I don't know. I just feel like all white people do feel entitled. I probably have some entitlement too for myself, and I know what my entitlement is. But I think a lot of white people, especially the ones who think they're really woke, they think they're like safe from all this stuff, and they're not. But Ben, no. Ben, I do think you're pretty woke, and I think you are aware of your privilege. So,
thank you very much. I'm going to use that clip. He's woke. You know, it's funny. I'm on a tangent here. I had some fun with this the other day because some reason I found myself listening to an old George Carlin bit. I do this from time to time. It's a little embarrassing. I go down that YouTube rabbit hole. I talked about this in an earlier show. And it's a bit where he talks about the American dream. And he goes, the reason they call it American dream is that you have to be asleep to believe in it. And I love that line. It's 16 years old. And now I just think about how like the Bill Maher's of the world are turning against wokeness. And I'm like, which way are we supposed to go? Are we supposed to be sleeping or are we supposed to be awake? Help me out, Bill Maher. You're the wise man. Interesting thing about white privilege. Everybody wants it. And this is another satire in the show. As Ramona said, one of the guests is a woman of color. I don't think they ever say exactly what her background is, but she has a darker skin than anybody else. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to give anything away, but something happens and she needs assistance from the white family. And boy, is she happy to get that assistance. And that's all I'm going to say. Similarly, there's one black employee at the club, at this resort, and she wants some assistance. She could use a little white privilege. And it kind of reminded me of that Dave Chappelle routine. I don't know if you ever saw that one where every black guy needs a white friend when they go out at night. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The kids get in trouble with the cops. Hey, let him. And trust me when I tell you, I've been in that position. Okay, Ben, go talk. And that's you see these two characters, particularly the friend of the girl, you know, the friend of the daughter, they're so obnoxious, turn into that white privilege. Okay, could you give me a little snippet of that? Because I could use some right now. And she uses it. She takes it. She uses it. And she is survives as a result. So everybody wants the white privilege, right, Romana?
Of course. Of course. And I think that's why I don't think they're leaving people of color necessarily scot-free. So I do think that, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, it's like, it's just showing that, you know, people of color can use the system in their advantage too. And this is how we uphold a system where white people are always going to have this privilege because of the way we play our roles in this society. So, and you know, and then I forgot to mention there's Jennifer Coolidge is in it too. And she plays like, she does a really good job playing this totally woo woo. That's what I call these kind of women. They're all like about like, they're totally crazy. And they're like all about, oh, spirituality. And I mean, it did make me laugh. I mean, the whole, she's going to the resort to bury her mother's ashes. And if you're Indian, you would probably start laughing because she's wearing like this, we call it a dupatta. You wear it with your Indian clothes. And she's wearing that when she's about to throw her mom's ashes into the water. And it just cracked me up because it's like these women all into like the Indian thing and the, and so it just made me laugh. I think she did a really good job. She was definitely a pretty lost woman, but she was privileged. But she did a really good role. I just thought it was a good show. I didn't think it was like, you know, I didn't think it was super deep because I think everybody knew that it was about white privilege. But I think there's little bits and pieces that can go over your head if you don't really pay attention. I mean, there's some characters who are definitely over the top. There's a husband, which I talked about in where who's a young couple who are married, and he doesn't get the room that he thought he was supposed with that his mom signed him up to have. And so that his whole like goal or his like mission is to get the room. And, you know, that he's definitely like totally over the top. But then his wife, which I think a lot of people, I saw a really funny joke on Twitter. If anything, we learned at the what with the light with White Lotus is that freelance journalists don't get paid that much money, that they'd rather stick with the crazy white guy than go on their own.
Go ahead.
But she definitely represents. I don't know. I might be giving away something in the choice that she makes at the end of the show. You know, she's struggling. This woman realizes she married this guy, but she knew what he was probably about before she married him. But once she gets married to him and they're on this honeymoon, she's kind of getting annoyed with him. She, you know, I have to tell you the two organizations I read or the media organizations I read a lot were from NPR and Vox. So I might be taking something from one of their articles, but I think NPR pointed out that she represents the white woman who thinks, you know, she definitely knows there's something wrong with the system and she's not necessarily benefiting from the system. But at the end of the day, she knows if she does stick with it and doesn't say much, it'll help her. So it's about the white women who stay quiet or really they say things, but they really kind of fall into the, you know, systematic way things are of white privilege. So I thought it was good. It was entertaining. It's only 6 episodes. So if somebody wants something, a pandemic watch, it's a quick watch. I was able to watch it within a week.
Well, it's each episode's an hour. So,
for me, it's totally a quick watch.
Yeah. But resist giving NPR credit for anything. That's a very good point that the NPR person, or it's probably the Vox article. Anyway, that's pretty good. I'm just teasing NPR. You know I love you. That's a very good point. And I struggle with this. I'm going to broaden it a little bit. I struggle with this all the time here in the city of Chicago. I'm always calling on people in the city of Chicago to see what's around them, see how the system, is so unfair and inequitable and, you know, we should reconsider how we spend our money and divide up the resources. And I remember one time getting into a fight with the precinct captain for Rahm Emanuel. Got into it wasn't a physical fight. I would have lost that. But it was a verbal fight and ended with me. He'd come to my house to get me to, believe it or not, support Rahm. And then it ended with me telling him if he didn't get off my front porch, I was going to call the police on him. So it got really nasty. But I was pointing out all the inequities in the city. And he was like, what do you care? You live in a nice neighborhood. And so what? Who cares? And I think, yeah, that so many Americans, that's their attitude. It's, you know, how far am I, do I want to go? And there's that one scene that's, it's cringing. It's, the writing is so good. And the acting, by the way, the acting is extraordinary throughout this whole series.
Yeah, but everybody's really good.
Everyone's good, even if they're, their characters are obnoxious. But Steve Zahn, who plays the actor who plays the father of the family, who's an interesting character in himself. Anyway, he's sitting at the table, and they get into discussion of the fact that white people have stolen the land from the Hawaiians who lived there before the white people came. And he goes on this riff that is just drenched with condescension about, oh, that's just the way the world is. And you're going to give up your vacation, your nice vacation, because you feel bad about it? The hell with that. I'm going to enjoy this beautiful island. And oh, well, shit happens. Like, God damn. Oh, my goodness. What an attitude. And this is the liberal guy, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. This is the equivalent of a Rahm voter in Chicago.
Well, Ben, why are you so critical about Rahm? You must not like them for some personal reason.
Ramana, it's rough going for white people. You know, that's just what I'm going to say.
Well, I was going to say, like, it was funny because I did see an article about that, how white guys are totally the bad guys now in almost every show. And then there were, you know, and then people pointed out that Ted Lasso is one of the few shows now where there's like one good white guy, but it's okay. I mean, I know, like, white people are so upset. Like, there's a lot of white people upset whenever, like, white people are shown in bad light. I'm like, listen, you've been the good guy for, like, ever since I started watching movies. It's okay for you to be the bad guy, because all of people who look like me, we're always, like, on the side, just one-dimensional terrorist. We're always the bad guys. So it's okay for us to dissect you and the way you behave little more. So I think it's good.
By the way, and to the point, and I'm stealing Ramana's line from her. Oh, well, that's how it goes. But it was you the one who pointed out the person who put this show together, and let's give him a shout out. Yeah. His name is White.
Mike White. And he's a white guy. White. And he's a white guy.
He's so white. His name is White.
Yeah, he is. He is actually really, really white. Like, I mean, pale. So, I mean, I'm just saying, he's an actor, and you've probably seen him, and the audience has probably seen him in School of Rock. That's probably one of the biggest movies that he's been in, but he's been in Hollywood for a long time. And so, yeah, his name is White too, which I thought was pretty funny. It did crack me up. And, you know, these are like, I'm not saying these are like, you know, everybody has to change who they are, but I do think it raises good questions. You know, a lot of people are against systematic racism, but people don't look, I think a lot of white people don't realize how privileged and entitled they are, or they like get to live in the world where everything is kind of designed for them and their everyday interactions. I think the show was good because it showed how like these smaller interactions kind of feed the whole system. That's what I liked about it.
Absolutely. And by the way, I just want to say, I would, if I had a rank, who were the most obnoxious characters in this show? And there's a long list of them, because like I said, it's just, there's nobody that looks good in this show that's a guest, with the exception of the son. I would say at the top of the list would not be a white man. It would be those two young women sitting around the swimming pool, one of whom is a person of color, who just radiate a meanness, Ramana. You know, they just radiate. They're like mean girls on steroids. And I would have to say, go ahead.
There was a top 10 list. I saw an article. I'm going to send it to you after we're done with the show, about the worst characters, the worst people on that show, like the worst characters. And it wasn't those two women. They're on it. but it's a white male, and it's not the one you probably think.
All right, so
I'll send it to you afterwards.
Send you the article. Okay, now who I already revealed? Of all the people in that show, go ahead.
I thought it was the husband. To me, the husband of that couple, the newly married couple, he was like one of the worst to me because he epitomized a white guy to me, like a bro. You know, it's like he was just like the worst things about white guys. Like they're so entitled. They think that everything is about them. And I'm married to a white guy. Okay. So like
he's not a bro.
I have to tell you, it's really funny when I told someone that I was getting married to Mick. Samina Mustafa, who's a guest on her show. And I'm like, yeah, I'm marrying a white guy. And then she said, well, at least he's not a bro. So she did say that. That's just kind of funny. But Mick, I have some things that are probably entitled and very North Shore, but Mick is pretty much a nice white guy. He's one of the good ones, but he does have some things that I think are very, I'm an entitled white guy. When we go to the airport, he gets so exasperated in the airport. I'm like, you're a white guy going through an airport. You've seen my two nephews, how they were treated in the airport. So I'm like, I told him, I'm like, you cannot complain about airport travel anymore as a white guy. But no, I make fun of him too all the time. So,
oh, it's always fun to make fun of Mick. That's one of our, by the way, I forgot to say the Jennifer Coolidge, who is a great actress, in my humble opinion. She's wonderful in everything she is. If you guys have ever seen the movie American Pie, she's Stifler's mom in American Pie.
She's so that's the who MILF. The act.
She's the MILF. And in American Pie, literally. In this movie, she plays, speaking of people that Romano loves to throw under the bus, what I call the Gwyneth Paltrow character. And it was Romano who introduced me to the concept of Gwyneth Paltrow. I didn't really know much about her, or take really out of the sentence. I didn't know anything about her. I've learned a lot from Romano about her, Gwyneth and her sense of entitlement. And man, I would say that Jennifer Coolidge's character is pretty odious as well. I mean, the way she abandons.
Oh, totally.
The young black woman at the hotel. It just, folks, I urge everybody. My opinion, it works as a soap opera that keeps you guessing, a murder mystery that keeps you wondering, you know, keeps you, the suspense builds. There's some funny moments in the movie too, in the show too. Episode 3, when, I don't want to give it away. Episode 3 is pretty funny. When they throw the ashes into the sea is pretty funny.
Which I talked about. I also have to say that I did like that one scene where that woman, you know, there's a black woman who works in the spa. That's one of the characters. That's a character Jennifer Coolidge makes a bond with. But there's a great scene where, you know, she listens to people, and these white women who come to their spa kind of use her as a therapist. And the best scene, like one of my younger sister and my friend, they, you know, they were talking about it before I watched it, and they're like, I loved it. So there's a scene where she's talking to this woman who she said she would talk to, and you know, and the, you know, this, she's a white woman who's complaining about her problems to this black woman. And then she just gets up and goes, I don't want to listen to this. And I love that scene because I do think it's very, you know, it's just showing that, you know, people use this woman, and then, you know, she gets up and says, screw it. And I think it kind of shows how a lot of women in the service industry are treated, and a lot of them are women of color, and they're kind of used as therapists. And you know, they're like, I had enough. I don't want to. Yeah. And, you know, and I think somebody pointed out also, like, as an African-American woman, like, black women are always considered to be the mammies, you know, like, you know, listen, you know, taking care of white women and white children. And I love that scene where she's just like, F it.
She goes, I'm out anymore.
So
I'm out.
Yeah. So I did. I forgot about that till right now. And I just wanted to say it.
So you think the bro is the most odious character of them all. And I think the two.
To me, he was. But the girls I thought were so obnoxious. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what I liked. That's what I liked about it, because they thought they were really woke and different than everybody else. But they really weren't. They were just as obnoxious. Just because you pretend you read all these like lofty books and, you know, books that are about equality does not mean that you're about equality.
No, she's reading Nietzsche by the pool. Come on.
Yeah, you know that what was I funny. Mean? Yeah. It's so it's so pretentious because, like, okay, someone like me, I mean, it's not like I don't purport to be like the smartest person in the universe, but if I'm going to sit on a beach, I'm going to be reading like a summer read or like a fashion magazine or something, but it's just like nobody reads those books on the beach and finishes them in a day because they'd have a different book every day. And I think that was something they were pointing out, that they're kind of full of it.
Yeah. They're
doing drugs.
Yeah. They're like, if I could tie it all together and Mick will get a smile out of it. There's like Rahm's reading list. I wrote a story about Mayor Rahm's reading list when he's the mayor. It was filled with these enormous, complicated, difficult to read tomes that it would take. Mick and I used to joke, it would take us 2 months to read one of these books. And Rahm's like, yeah, this is my favorite book of all time. I'm like, give me a break. You are so full of it. Anyway, Ramana Hussein, I think you and I agreed. Two thumbs way up to the White Lotus. And your next assignment is to watch Hacks so we can take the deep dive on Hacks. Gene Smart is brilliant in Hacks.
First, I gotta finish Paul McCartney because I do want to talk to you about that.
Oh, yes.
The Paul McCartney Hulu. I started that already and hopefully finish it soon.
All right. Very good. Ramana Hussein, thank you very much. It's always a blast talking to you.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.